Hello. This is a November 27th reading of the Sioux City Journal. The front page has an article titled Swaddling the Art Center. Razzle Dazzle Sewing Days Bring Siouxlanders Together. There's a photo of a woman with big glasses and short cropped hair at a desk sewing something on a sewing machine. The fabric is sort of like a pinstripe sort of pattern with reds, whites, and blues. And at the table is another person looking down at her sewing, and besides her is also a what looks to be a stack of plastic containers. It's captioned, "Artist Amanda Browder works with volunteer Blake Campbell Schlottlipman during a community sewing event at Jefferson Beer Supply in Jefferson, South Dakota on November 15th. The community sewing event, one of many held during the past month, to produce the fabric which Browder will use to cover the Sioux City Art Center." Article by Dolly A. Butts. Jefferson, South Dakota. Blake Campbell Slotman bluntly stated that he thinks Amanda Browder's plan to cover the Sioux City Art Center in brightly colored cotton fabric is, quote-unquote, insane. However, the 11-year-old has been eager to assist Browder, a Brooklyn, New York artist, with her large-scale fabric installation, Razzle Dazzle, by sewing strips of fabric together at Jefferson Beer Supply. Blake, in fact, has done so much sewing for Browder that she decided to reward his efforts by teaching him how to make a bag during a recent public sewing day for the temporary art installation. I think it's just cool, said Blake, who has never touched a sewing machine before meeting Browder at a previous sewing event at the brewery. Blake's dad, Shane Schlottman, stood off to the side watching as Browder helped Blake slowly feed red, white, and blue plaid fabric through a gray, heavy-duty Singer sewing machine. Schlottman remarked, "It takes a lot of fabric to cover a building of that magnitude." Next year, Browder will transform the Sioux City Art Center's rotunda into a giant kaleidoscope with the fabric Siouxlanders, including Blake, sewed together. She will also drape other portions of the town building and adjacent Gilchrist Learning Center in vibrant hues for 2 months in celebration of Art Splash's 30th anniversary. The installation is being funded by grants, including one from the National Endowment for the Arts. The sewing process began Labor Day weekend during the 29th Art Splash on the Art Center's campus. Art Splash, a 2-day art festival, is the Art Center's annual fundraising event. Browder's latest month-long sewing blitz from late October through mid-November took her to a variety of locations, including the Offs downtown and Morningside branch libraries, Briarcliff University, the Siouxland Center for Active Generations, and the WH, this continues on to page 2, Over Museum in Vermilion, South Dakota. Excuse me. A sewing event at Sioux Career Academy drew roughly 100 people, which Browder said was amazing. She has sewn with 4-year-olds and 97-year-olds in the area. It goes with the idea of multiple ownership. Everybody's part of the project. It's not just me, Browder said, as she zipped around Jefferson Beer Supply, pinning fabric and plugging in sewing machines. I really want us to come together at the end and say, we made this. Something different. Siouxlanders are quite excited about Razzle Dazzle, but Browder said they've also expressed some concerns about how she's going to pull off such a feat. Locals have peppered Browder with questions such as, how are you going to put this up? How is that going to stay up? Is the wind going to get to it? The rain? Browder, who has covered buildings all over the world, alleviated their worries by showing photographs of prior installations and saying, "We used to put our clothing outdoor. It was totally fine." We used to put our clothing outdoors. It was totally fine. Jessica Hammond, a local mural artist, said it was really important for her to assist Browder with her fabric installation. Hammond did some sewing when she was a child, but she said she only knows the very basics. She has a sewing machine, which she pulled out during the pandemic to make a few face masks. If I were to go to a different city and try to do a community project, I would hope that somebody would help me, she said. There's just something really cool about working with a community, especially on a project that you've never done before. I do art all the time, but I don't really sew. It's fun to just get my hands into something different. Talia Kafka, a 10-year-old from Sioux City, or Thalia? Thalia Kafka. A 10-year-old from Sioux City stuck pins into multicolored checkered fabric that stretched across tables at the brewery before she moved to a sewing machine again and began piecing together various strips of orange fabric. I actually have some before. I don't really make big things. I make like little pillows, said Kafka, who thinks sewing is fun and relaxing. Fabric donations needed. Browder estimates that Siouxlanders have sewn 1,925 feet of fabric in just over a month's time. However, she said she still needs more fabric donations. Browder is seeking very brightly colored cotton fabric, which isn't clothing or stretching or stretchy. Pattern and solid color fabrics more than 1 square foot in size are ideal. Colorful, color, color, color. I'm getting a lot of white, Browder said with a chuckle. Nearby, burnt orange, neon orange, and orange SpongeBob SquarePants pants print fabric laid pinned in a pile on the brewery's floor, waiting to be sewn together. Mainly, we're going to do light next to dark, crazy powder next to solid, cool versus warm. These comparisons will help continue that design. Sioux City Arts Center curator Christopher Atkins has known about Browder's installation for many years, but it wasn't until Browder created a large-scale installation in Atkins' hometown of St. Charles, Illinois, that he really delved into how much a project comes to a city. That he really delved into how much a project comes to a city and how the community can benefit from it. Amanda's process is really important because it expands how we think about how an artist works. It's not just one person in the studio. Really, the studio is everywhere that she shows up, said Atkins, who has attended Browder's sewing events. It's not just one artist. This is going to be hundreds of artists who are all contributing to this exhibition, and it's happening over a long period of time. Browder will be back in Siouxland in March for another month-long sewing tour. She'll spend nearly 2 months in the area in July for the assembly and installation of Razzle Dazzle. I'm thrilled. I'm really thrilled. This is really exciting, Atkins said. Anyone interested in donating fabric can contact Browder on her website, amandabrowder.com, or call the Art Center 717-279-6272. That's 712-279 6272 for the Art Center. On the first page, in a column squished along the right side, is an article titled "Council to Vote on X's Lease." Lewis and Clark Park would be leased to explorers for 12 years. Article also by Dolly A. Butts. Sioux City. The Sioux City Council will be asked Monday to greenlight a 12-year agreement with the Sioux City Explorers for the lease of Lewis and Clark Park. The council is expected to vote on a resolution inviting proposals for the lease of land in the Donner Park urban renewal area and announcing the city's intent to accept the explorers' proposal. Since the stadium is located in an urban renewal area, the city must follow the urban renewal law and give a 30-day notice of its intent to lease the park to the explorers. If the council approves the resolution, a public hearing on the matter will be scheduled for January 8th. Under the terms of the 12-year agreement, the explorers will pay the city $100,000 per year by May 1st to lease the ballpark, which includes office spaces, locker rooms, stadium grounds, field equipment, playing and practice fields, spectator areas, as well as use of the paved parking lot around the stadium. The duration of the lease and the annual payment mirrors what the explorers initially proposed. With the X's current 10-year lease set to expire in April, the Sioux City Parks and Recreation Department put out a request for proposals, RFP, for the city-owned stadium at 3400 Line Drive. In addition to the explorers who have played at the stadium since it opened in 1993, the Northwoods Leagues, a college wooden bat summer league, submitted a proposal to lease the park. A selection committee comprised of Nick Paul Miotti, OVG 360's general manager of the Orpheum Theater and the Tyson Events Center, Joe Craig, a member of the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board, Justin Cooper of the Sioux City Sports Commission, Ward Franz, director of sports tourism for Explore Sioux City, and Teresa Fitch, Sioux City finance director, met on September 15th and formally recommended the Explorer's proposal by be presented to the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board for consideration and approval. On September 27th, the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board unanimously voted in favor of the selection committee's recommendation. The day after the advisory board's vote, Craig told the journal the monetary difference between the proposals was pretty big, which made the decision easier. But he noted that everything looked great, concerning the Northwoods League and the Explorers have a proven track record. Then, in October, the council voted to authorize city staff to enter into negotiations with the Explorers to formulate a lease agreement. We're here because the lease is up, not because we're making many demands on the X's. We're here because the lease is up, not because we're making any demands on the X's. Excuse me. Mayor Bob Scott said before the vote, "The X's will be responsible for maintaining and making repairs to the premises and fixed assets up to $1,000 per occurrence according to the proposed lease agreement. The city will continue to be responsible for capital improvement projects and furnish air conditioning and heating equipment, which the Explorers are responsible for maintaining. The ball club will provide the city 400 complimentary single-game tickets annually for each year of the lease, as well as 400 complimentary tickets for two dates during each year of the lease to the current and any future field naming sponsor. If the city would allow another group to use the facility on available calendar dates, the proposed agreement states that the group using the facility will pay for event-related expenses in a reasonable facility rental amount mutually agreed upon by landlord and tenant. The city may reserve 15 calendar dates for non-tenant events according to the..." Then it continues on to page 2. "According to the proposed agreement, these dates are to be mutually agreed upon by the designated representative of tenant and landlord, city manager for landlord's use for other..." Excuse me. "These dates are to be mutually agreed upon by the designated representative of tenant and landlord, city manager for landlord's use for other tournaments and events. Non-baseball events scheduled during the league season shall be of a type that would not inflict damage to the playing surface or dramatically alter or change field maintenance schedules," the proposed agreement states. "The 15 days of landlord use for non-tenant activities may include high school and college usage for baseball and non-baseball events. The move to open up the stadium lease came after the city and the Explorers fought for months over the condition of the stadium's seating. At one point, team owner John Roost, a local businessman, threatened to move the team elsewhere unless the city replaced all of the seats, which he described as being in serious and poor condition. In June, the city council approved a $429,000 contract with the Sioux Falls Gym Equipment and Bleacher Dealer for 2,300 upper-level seats. Replacement of the upper-level seats is expected to be completed by May 1, 2024. The city previously replaced 770 seats in the stadium's lower bowl in time for the Explorers' first weekend series of the 2023 season." And on page 2, there's a photo of a bunch of red chairs in like a baseball stadium. Up near the top, being hosed by a man in a windbreaker in a beige cap. It's captioned, "Walter Duenas power washes seats at Lewis and Clark Park in Sioux City in May." And I apologize, but I forgot to mention there was a photo on the first page for the Browder article too. It's just a photo of the Sioux City Arts Center, an exterior shot. It has like really colorful, like striped lines, like painted on the walls, like very vibrant, like greens and reds and yellows, all sort of like crisscrossing over each other under this blue sky, and this big brick and mortar looking center. And it's captioned "Large scale installation artist Amanda Browder's proposal for the Sioux City Art Center," and shown the downtown building and adjacent Gilchrist Learning Center will be draped in brightly colored cotton fabric for 2 months in 2024. Oh, okay. I apologize. This isn't like a photo. It's like sort of like a proposed idea. So all like the colorful parts of the art center are sort of like photoshopped in. There are other photos on the first front page too that I also missed. One is a photo of Amanda Browder's studio. There are like sort of patterns and, kind of flowery crisscrossing sort of patterns hung up on the wall, and shelves that look like they're full of fabric, and a row of tables occupied by people in sweaters and knit hats. With are also covered in like fabric and sewing machines. On page two, there's an article titled "Search for Missing Wall Lake Trucker Yields Nothing of Interest Sunday," article by Mason Doctor. Sac City, Iowa, that's SAC City, Iowa. A search along US Highway 71 near Sac City for missing Wall Lake, Iowa truck driver David Schultz yielded nothing of interest Sunday, but a significant amount of land was scoured, one of the searchers wrote in a social media post Sunday evening. Schultz, a 53-year-old married father of 10-year-old twin boys, vanished last week. He was last heard from in the early morning hours Tuesday, according to the Lakeview Police Department. His truck was found Tuesday afternoon northeast of Sac City, parked on northbound US Highway 71, about 5 miles north of the old US Highway 20 intersection. The truck was reportedly turned off, but it wasn't pulled over, and the trailer was still loaded with young pigs. The United Cajun Navy, a nonprofit organization that organizes search and rescue teams, was involved in the search Sunday. Jake Rowley, a Midwest team leader of the United Cajun Navy, wrote on Facebook that the search will continue Monday starting at 10:30 a.m. with a command post at Sparky's One Stop, a gas station near the intersection of US Highway 20 and Highway 4, north of Rockwell City, Iowa. As we go into the week, we understand that our numbers of volunteers will diminish. Please consider taking some time during the week if you are able to help, Rowley wrote on Facebook. Schultz's wife, Sarah, echoed that sentiment in a Facebook post earlier in the day, Sunday. "Today is the last day of the weekend that we won't get the turnouts on weekdays like we do on the weekend. Wait, today is the last day of the weekend, and we won't get the turnouts on weekdays like we do on the weekend. We are running short on the daylight too," Sarah Schultz wrote Sunday. Excuse me. Northeast Sac County property owners have been asked to check their property and outbuildings for anything out of the ordinary. The Lakeview Police Department has asked anyone who has seen or heard from Schultz to continue contact them at 712-657-2513. That's 712-657-2513 for the Lakeview Police Department. The Sac City Communication Center can be reached at 712-662-7127. That's 712-662-7127 for the Sac County, excuse me, Communications Center. Moving on to A3 is Nation and World. The front article is titled Middle East ceasefire, more hostages released. Third group includes one American, 39 Palestinians also freed. Article by Wafa Sharafa and Sami Magdi for the Associated Press. Deir al-Balah, Gaza Strip. The fragile ceasefire between Israel and Hamas was back on track Sunday as the militants freed 17 more hostages, including 14 Israelis and one and the first American, in a third exchange under a four-day truce that the U.S. said it hoped would be extended. In turn, Israel released 39 Palestinian prisoners, all young men. Some hostages were handed over directly to Israel, while others left through Egypt. Israel's army said one was airlifted to a hospital. U.S. President Joe Biden said the elderly woman was very sick and was in need of immediate medical help. Hundreds of Israelis draped in flags cheered as freed hostages waving arrived at an Air Force base. They ranged in age from 4 to 84 and included Abigail Eden, a 4-year-old girl and dual citizen whose parents were killed in the Hamas attack that started the war on October 7th. What she endured was unthinkable, Biden said, of the first American freed under the truce. He did not know her condition. He did not have updates on other American hostages and said his goal was to extend the ceasefire deal as long as possible. In all, 9 children ages 17 and younger were on the list, according to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's office. 3 more Thai nationals were released. Separately, Hamas said it released a Russian hostage in response to the efforts of Russian President Vladimir Putin. The Russian-Israeli citizen was the first male hostage to be freed. A fourth exchange is expected on Monday, the last day of the ceasefire, during which a total of 50 hostages and 150 Palestinian prisoners are to be freed. Most are women and minors. Many Palestinians view prisoners held by Israel, including those implicated in attacks, as heroes resisting occupation. We can get all hostages back home. We have to keep pushing, said two of Eden's relatives, a great aunt and cousin, in a statement thanking mediators. International mediators led by the U.S., Egypt, and Qatar are trying to extend the ceasefire that began Friday. Hamas, for the first time, said it would seek to extend the deal by looking to release a larger number of hostages. The Israeli army's chief spokesman, Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari, said it was open to extending the ceasefire if more hostages are released. Israel earlier said the truce can be extended by an extra day for every additional 10 hostages freed, but has vowed to quickly resume its offensive once it ends. Ahead of the latest release, Netanyahu visited the Gaza Strip, where he spoke with troops. At the end of the day, we will return everyone, he said of the hostages, adding that we are continuing until the end, until victory. Nothing will stop us. This is the first significant pause in 7 weeks of war, marked by the deadliest Israeli-Palestinian violence in decades. More than 13,300 Palestinians have been killed, roughly two-thirds of them women and children, according to the health ministry in Hamas-ruled Gaza. Below this is another article, Asia Trilateral Summit. There's a photo of sort of like a summit being held in this like big round room. There's sort of this circular painting on the floor with sort of like green and like kind of like a dark green, orange, yellow sort of motif. With like zebra stripes and sort of like suns and fish scales, it looks like. sorry, got a bit distracted by this very beautiful floor. And there's like a desk making a circle in the center of the room with people sitting around it. People standing around it with cameras, and there's a sort of panel in the back. There's characters on it, and a flags. One looks like it's for South Korea, another for China, another for Japan. Japanese flag. Delegate. It's captioned: delegations of South Korea, center, China, right, and Japan, left, attend the trilateral foreign ministers meeting Sunday in Busan, South Korea. High-level meeting, first in 4 years. South Korea, Japan, and China agree to restore cooperation in region. Article by Hwang Jin Kim for the Associated Press, Seoul, South Korea. Meeting for the first time in about 4 years, the top diplomats from South Korea, Japan, and China agreed Sunday to revive cooperation among the Asian neighbors and resume their leaders' trilateral summit, but without a specific timing. Closely linked economically and culturally with one another, the three countries together account for about 25% of the global gross domestic product. But efforts to boost cooperation have often hit a snag because of a mix of issues, including historical disputes stemming from Japan's wartime aggression and the strategic competition between China and the United States. We three ministers agreed to restore and normalize three-nation cooperation at an early date, South Korean Foreign Minister Park Shin told reporters after his meeting with Japan's Yoko Kamikawa, and China's Wang Yi in Busan, South Korea. Park said the three ministers affirmed an earlier agreement by lower-level officials to restart the summit at the earliest mutually convenient time and agreed to expedite preparations for the meeting. Kamikawa, Kamikawa, separately said the ministers agreed to speed up their work to achieve the summit at an early and appropriate timing. The three also agreed to push for diverse cooperation projects in areas such as people-to-people exchange, trade, technology, public health, sustainable development, and security, according to South Korean and Japanese statements. The lack of an agreement on the timing for the trilateral summit would suggest the top-level gathering won't likely happen this year, as South Korea, the chair of the next summit, had hoped, observers say. Still, Kamikawa said that a reactivation of a trilateral diplomacy is an important step toward achieving an upcoming Japan-China-South Korea summit. Since they held their first standalone trilateral summit in 2008, the leaders of the three countries were supposed to meet annually. Instead, the summit has been suspended since 2019. The meeting Sunday was also the first since 2019. South Korea and Japan are key U.S. military allies, hosting a total of 80,000 American troops on their territories. Their recent push to beef up a trilateral security cooperation with the United States has angered China, which is sensitive to any moves it perceives as seeking to contain its rise to dominance in Asia. But some observers say the fact that Chinese President Xi Jinping and President Joe Biden struck a conciliatory tone in their first face-to-face meeting in a year earlier this month would provide Seoul, Tokyo, and Beijing with diplomatic room to maneuver to find ways to revive three-way cooperation. After her meeting with Wang on Saturday, Kamikawa said she renewed Japan's demand that China remove its ban on seafood imports from Japan in response to Tokyo's discharge of treated radioactive wastewater from its tsunami-hit nuclear power plant. Wang said China opposed Japan's irresponsible action of releasing the wastewater and called for an independent monitoring. Below is another article titled "Russia Says It Downed Citizens of Ukrainian Drones," article by the Associated Press. Ukraine tried to attack Moscow with dozens of drones, Russian authorities said Sunday, just a day after Ukrainian officials reported that Russia had launched its most intense drone attack on Kyiv since the beginning of its full-scale war in 2022. Russian air defenses brought down at least 24 drones over the Moscow region, which surrounds but doesn't include the capital, and four other provinces to the south and west, the Russian Defense Ministry and Moscow Mayor Sergei Sobyanin, S-O-B-Y-A-N-I-N, YANIN reported in a series of telegram updates. Neither referenced casualties. Andrei Vorobyev, governor of the Moscow region, wrote on Telegram that the drone strikes damaged three unspecified buildings there, adding that no one was hurt. One drone crashed into a 12-story apartment building in the western Russian city of Tula, about 113 miles south of Moscow, slightly wounding one resident and causing limited damage, local governor Alexei Diamin wrote on Telegram on Sunday morning. Moscow's Vinnikovo and Domodedovo airports also briefly shut down because of the drone attack, according to Russian state-run news agency TASS. Both appeared to have resumed normal operation by 6 a.m. local time Sunday, according to data from international flight tracking portals. Russian Telegram channels speculated that Ukrainian forces have deployed a previously unseen type of drone in the purported strike, pointing out some similarities to the Iranian-made weapons Moscow routinely employs in its attack on Ukraine. Squished to the left of Nation and World are the I digests. The first digest is titled "Sierra Leone Leader Declares National Curfew." Freetown, Sierra Leone. Sierra Leone's president declared a nationwide curfew Sunday after gunmen attacked the military's main and largest barracks in the West African nation's capital and then overran detonation centers, including a major prison. The attack raised fears of a breakdown of order amid a surge of coups in the region. In recent years, a string of West and Central African countries have experienced military coups. This year alone, the governments of Niger and Gabon were over Gabon, Gabon, were overthrown by military factions, and there were attempts in Burkina, Burkina Faso, and Sudan. The detention centers were attacked just as military forces fought to restore calm at the Wilberforce Mac military barracks, according to Information Minister Chirner Ba. NC deputies say four found shot dead. Autryville, North Carolina. Deputies responded to a call about shots fired in North Carolina on Sunday, found four people shot to death in what appeared to be a campsite for homeless people, authorities said. An initial review of the crime scene indicated someone killed three people before killing themselves, Sampson County Sheriff's Captain Eric Pope told WRAL TV. Two men and two women were found dead around a tent at the end of a private road rutted with huge potholes near Autryville, authorities said. The names of the people killed were not released, and Pope said investigators are still collecting evidence. Moving to the brieflies, Vermont, three young men of Palestinian descent who were in Burlington for a Thanksgiving holiday gathering were shot and injured, one seriously, at about 6:25 p.m. Saturday near the University of Vermont, police said Sunday. Authorities said the attack may have been a hate crime. Pope Francis on Sunday revealed that he has a lung inflammation but will go later this week to Dubai to address the climate change conference. Francis skipped his weekly Sunday appearance at a window overlooking St. Peter's Square. An Israeli airstrike Sunday hit the international airport in the Syrian capital of Damascus and put it out of commission, Syrian state media said. Israel has struck Syria's Damascus and Aleppo international airport several times since the onset of the Hamas-Israel war in Gaza on October 7th. London protest. Tens of thousands of people, including former UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson, gathered Sunday in London for a march against anti-Semitism, a day after large crowds turned out for a pro-Palestine rally. Johnson was joined by UK Chief Rabbi Ephraim Mervis, Ephraim? Ephraim Mervis, or Mervis, and other government officials to express solidarity with the Jewish community. Spokesman wanted. Russia has added Andy Stone, the spokesman of U.S. tech giant Meta, which owns Facebook and Instagram, to a wanted list, according to an online database maintained by the country's interior ministry. Alaska landslide. Authorities recovered the body of 11-year-old Kara Heller Saturday evening from the debris of a landslide in southeast Alaska that tore down a wooded mountainside days earlier, smashing homes in Wrangell, a remote fishing village. The girl was the fourth person confirmed killed by last Monday night's landslide. Skipping article A4 because it's a big ad for the Sioux City Journal app. And moving to A5 for sports. NFL Roundup. Lawrence Jaguars edge Texans. Edge? Houston. Trevor Lawrence threw for 360 yards and a touchdown, and the AFC South-leading Jacksonville Jaguars escaped with a 24-21 victory over the division rival Houston Texans on Sunday when Matt Amendola's 58-yard field goal attempt bounced off the crossbar with 34 seconds left. The Jaguars avenged their 37-17 home loss to Houston in Week 3 and created some separation at the top of the division. C.J. Stroud, the second overall pick in the draft, threw for 306 yards and two touchdowns as Houston's three-game winning streak was snapped. He has 3,268 yards passing this season to move past Justin Herbert, 3,224 for most in NFL history by a rookie in his first 11 games. Derek Stingley Jr. intercepted Lawrence near midfield early in the second half. It was the second straight game with an interception for the third overall pick in the 2022 draft. Steelers 16, Bengals 10. Kenny Pickett threw for a season-high 278 yards as Pittsburgh showed new life on offense days after firing offensive coordinator Matt Canada, beating Joe Burrowless of Cincinnati on the road. The Steelers totaled 421 yards, snapping a streak of 58 games without gaining 400 yards. Pat Freiermuth had a career-high 120 yards receiving as the Steelers outgained their opponent for the first time this season under interim offensive coordinator Eddie Faulkner. Colts 27, Buccaneers 20. Jonathan Taylor ran for two scores. Gardner Minshew added another, and the Indianapolis defense came up with a late turnover to preserve a home victory over Tampa Bay. Indy won its third straight and climbed above .500 for the first time since the end of September with its second home victory of the season. Falcons 24, Saints 15. Desmond Ridder overcame two interceptions by throwing a touchdown pass to Bijan Robinson in the fourth quarter. And Atlanta moved into a first-place tie in the woeful NFC South by beating New Orleans at home. The Saints were limited by injuries at wide receiver after losing Chris Olave, concussion, and Rashid Shaheed, thigh. New Orleans outgained the Falcons 444-397 as Derek Carr passed for 304 yards but settled for five field goals. Titans 17, Panthers 10. Derrick Henry ran for two touchdowns and 76 yards, helping host Tennessee snap a three-game skid by beating Carolina. This was just the fourth game in Music City this season for the Titans, who played at home only once over the past 7 weeks. Eagles 37, Bills 34, overtime. Jalen Hurts scored the winning touchdown on a quarterback draw with 2 minutes and 37 seconds left in overtime. And the Philadelphia Eagles beat the Buffalo Bills 37-34 on a cold, rainy Sunday. Philadelphia's Jake Elliott tied the game with a 59-yard field goal with 20 seconds remaining. Giants 10, Patriots 7. Xavier McKinney set up Randy Bullock's go-ahead 42-yard field goal midway through the fourth quarter with New York's third interceptions of New England's woeful pair of quarterbacks, and the host Giants won consecutive games for the first time this season. Rams 37, Cardinals 14. Matthew Stafford threw for 229 yards and a season-high 4 touchdown passes, 2 each to Tyler Higbee and Kyren Williams. Kyren Williams? And Los Angeles rolled at Arizona. Chiefs 31, Raiders 17. Patrick Mahomes passed for 298 yards and 2 touchdowns, and Kansas City ended its 3-game second-half scoring drought to rally at Las Vegas. Broncos 29, Browns 12. Russell Wilson accounted for 2 touchdowns, and Denver's defense produced 3 more takeaways and a safety in the Broncos' home victory over injury-riddled Cleveland. Ravens 20, Chargers 10. Zay Flowers had a TD catch and ran for a game-sealing score late in the fourth quarter. Baltimore's defense forced 4 turnovers, and the Ravens defeated host Los Angeles. Lamar Jackson became the 4th quarterback in NFL history to exceed 5,000 rushing yards. Around the NFL, Jones Zappe, both see playing time for Pats, East Rutherford, New Jersey. After Patriots coach Bill Belichick created some suspense heading into the game against the Giants by refusing to announce a starting quarterback, Mac Jones got his 11th start of the season Sunday but was pulled after the first half. The 2021 first-round draft pick was 12 of 21 for 89 yards and threw 2 interceptions. Bailey Zappe took over at the start of the second half and led the Patriots to the tying touchdown early in the third quarter. Thompson Robinson exits early for Browns. Denver. Cleveland quarterback Dorian Thompson Robinson was evaluated for a head injury Sunday after he took a hard hit from Denver linebacker Baron Browning. In the third quarter against the Broncos, Thompson Robinson was hit just below his chin as he released a pass. Browning was flagged for roughing the passer on the play. The Browns rookie headed to the sideline on his own after the hit. Brieflies. Titans. Derrick Henry's second rush of the game for Tennessee, a 5-yarder, put him over 9,000 yards rushing for his career as the 38th in NFL history to reach that mark. Henry also has at least 80 touchdowns rushing before turning 30, putting him in even more exclusive company as the 8th with that combination. He joined Adrian Peterson, Barry Sanders, Emmitt Smith, Jim Brown, LaDainian Tomlinson, Eric Dickerson, and Marshall Faulk. Saints. WR Chris Olave had team-high totals of 7 catches for 114 yards before leaving in the third quarter Sunday. Moving along to college football, number 3 Washington, number 5 Oregon move up. Article by Ralph D. Russo for the Associated Press. Number 3 Washington, number 4 Florida State, and number 5 Oregon all moved up a spot in the Associated Press college football poll Sunday, giving the Pac-12 2 top 5 teams for the first time since the final ranking of the 2016 season. Georgia remained number 1 as the 2-time defending national champions have been for 24 straight polls dating back to the middle of the last season. The Bulldogs received 52 of 62 first place votes. Michigan returned to number 2 following a week of at number 3 and received 10 first-place votes after beating Ohio State 30-24 in Ann Arbor on Saturday. The Buckeyes slipped from 2nd to number 6, cleared the way for Washington to reach its best ranking since finishing the 2000 season at number 3, setting up a top-5 matchup with Oregon in the Pac-12 championship game on Friday in Las Vegas. The final Pac-12 championship game in the conference's current form before 10 members leave for other Power 5 conferences will be its first matching top 5 teams. The first time there were 2 Pac-12 teams in the top 5 of the AP poll was 2016 when Southern California finished number 3 and Washington number 4. The first time it happened during the season was October 6, 2013, when Oregon was number 2 and Stanford was 5th. Number 7 Texas and number 8 Alabama hold their places Sunday. Missouri moved up one spot to 9th and Penn State to number 10. Poll points. The same eight teams have been the top eight teams in the country for five straight weeks, with the only loss among those teams during that span being Ohio State's to Michigan. The last time there was no team turnover in the top eight for that long was 2008 in weeks 11 to 15. That year, Florida, Oklahoma, Texas, Alabama, USC, Penn State, Utah, and Texas Tech held the top eight spots in some order for 5 months, 5 weeks, excuse me. Among the top eight teams, there are only four losses, one each for Oregon, Ohio State, Texas, and Alabama. Of those four losses, three have come to other teams in the top eight. Oregon lost to Washington, Ohio State lost to Michigan, and Alabama lost to Texas. Texas's loss came to number 12, Oklahoma, extended out to the top 12 to include number 11, Mississippi, and the only loss to a currently unranked team among that group is Oklahoma's to Kansas. In and out. North Carolina State and SMU made their AP top 25 season debuts this week, raising to 44 the total number of teams to be ranked for at least a week this season. Falling out for the first time this season was Tennessee, which finished its regular season 8-4 with a victory over Vanderbilt after barely hanging on at number 25 last week. Kansas State also dropped out again after losing a high-scoring game in the snow to Iowa State. Ba-ba-ba. Conference call. Five teams from non-Power 5 conferences in the AP Top 25 is the most since the final 2021 poll. Oh, okay. SEC 5, numbers 1, 8, 9, 11, and 13. Pac-12, 4, numbers 3, 5, 14, 21, tie. Big Ten, 4, numbers 2, 6, 10, 18. ACC, 3, numbers 4, 15, 21, tie. Big 12, 3, numbers 7, 12, and 19. American, 2, numbers 17 and 25. Conference USA 1, number 20, Sun Belt 1, number 24, Mid-American 1, number 23, Independent 1, number 16. Ranked versus ranked. Number 8, Alabama versus number 1, Georgia and Atlanta, Southeastern Conference Championship. Number 18, Iowa versus number 2, Michigan and Indianapolis, Big Ten Championship. Number 5, Oregon versus number 3, Washington and Las Vegas, Pac-12 Championship. Number 15, versus number 4, Florida State in Charlotte, North Carolina, Atlantic Coast Conference at Championship. Number 19, Oklahoma State versus number 7, Texas in Arlington, Texas, Big 12 Championship. Number 25, SMU, number 17, Tulane, American Athletic Conference Championship. And then college football notes, AP source, Texas A&M working to hire Elko from Duke. So, article by the Associated Press. Texas A&M is working on a deal to hire Duke coach Mike Elko, replacing Jimbo Fisher with his former defensive coordinator for 4 years in College Station. A person with knowledge of the discussions told the Associated Press on Sunday. The person spoke to the AP on condition of an anonymity because an agreement had not been finalized, but said Elko had emerged as the school's top target. Another person with knowledge of the situation told the AP on Sunday evening that Elko has informed Duke about his talks with Texas A&M. That person also spoke on the condition of an anonymity. An gosh darn it, I can't get this word. Anonymity. Because Duke hasn't committed publicly on the matter. The Houston Chronicle first reported that Texas A&M was expected to hire Elko as head coach. Elko left the Aggies to take his first head coaching job at Duke after the 2021 season and went 15-8 in 2 seasons. The Blue Devils had won just 10 games combined the 3 previous years. Texas A&M fired Fisher earlier this month, paying a record buyout of more than $75 million to move on from him with 2 games left in his 6th season with the Aggies. Elko, who also had stints as defensive coordinator at Wake Forest and Notre Dame, Oh, Notre Dame, sorry. Led defenses that ranked in the top three of the Southeastern Conference in his final two seasons with A&M. Lebby hired by Mississippi State. Mississippi State hired Oklahoma offensive coordinator Jeff Lebby as its new head coach on Sunday. Lebby has been offensive coordinator for the Sooners the last 2 years after two seasons holding the same position at Mississippi. This will be his first head coaching job, ba-ba-ba, in Mississippi State's third head coach in as many seasons. Zach Arnett was fired by athletic director Zach Selman after less than one full season as head coach of the Bulldogs. Arnett replaced Mike Leach, who died of a heart condition after the 2022 regular season. Allen out at Indiana. Tom Allen spent four seasons steadily taking Indiana up the Big Ten ladder, then everything came crashing down in college football's rapidly evolving world. Three consecutive losing seasons and a 3-year conference record of 3-24 cost Allen his dream job on Sunday when the two sides reached a financial settlement to part ways. It has been my greatest professional honor to serve as Indiana's head football coach for the past 7 years, Allen said in a statement released by his agent. Representing this university and the state has meant more to me than you can imagine. Our entire journey here has been based on a simple concept: love each other. That's love, period, each period, other, period. It's what we've done. It's what we'll always do. I continue to believe it's a recipe to change the world. Houston fires Holgorsen. The Houston Cougars fired coach Dana Holgorsen Borson on Sunday, after finishing his third losing season in 5 years. Over the course of his five seasons with the Cougars, Dana made strides in our football program in many ways and led the groundwork for our transition to the Big 12 Conference, Houston Vice President of the Athletics, Chris Pesman, said in a statement. Ultimately, the result on the field fell below our standards of excellence. We are grateful to Dana for his efforts and commitment to our student athletes, and we wish him the very best in his future endeavors. On A6, the front on A6 Sports continues. NBA Booker's three-pointer with 1.7 seconds left seals Suns win. Article for the Associated Press. New York. Devin Booker made a tie-breaking three-pointer with 1.7 seconds remaining, finishing with 28 points and 11 assists to lead the Phoenix Suns over the New York Knicks 116 to 113 on Sunday for their seventh consecutive victory. With Kevin Durant out, the Knicks focused extra attention on Booker throughout the game, but after they forced him to give up the ball initially on the Suns' final possession, Booker raced to get it back and fired the winner from behind the arc, right in front of New York's bench. Eric Gordon added 25 points for the Suns, who were also without guard Grayson Allen. He had started all 16 games before feeling ill Sunday. Jalen Brunson had 35 points, 8 assists, and 6 rebounds for the Knicks, who lost for the third time in 10 games. Bucks 108, Trailblazers 102. Giannis, ooh, Antetokounmpo. Oh, boy, oh boy. Antetokounmpo. Giannis made a tie-breaking tip-in with 18.5 seconds left. Damian Lillard scored 31 points against his former team, and Milwaukee overcame a 26-point deficit to beat visiting Portland. Lillard played the first 11 seasons of his career with the Trailblazers before requesting a trade over the summer and eventually leading with the Bucks in Milwaukee just before training camp. Magic 130, Hornets 117. Franz Wagner and Cole Anthony scored 30 points each to help Orlando pull away from visiting Charlotte. The Magic extended their winning streak to 7 straight games. Celtics 113, Hawks 108. Jason Tatum had 34 points, Jalen Brown scored 21, and injury-depleted Boston defeated visiting Atlanta. Trae Young paced the Hawks with 33 points and 7 assists. Timberwolves 119, Grizzlies 97. Anthony Edwards scored 24 points. Karl Anthony Towns and Mike Conley each added 18, and Minnesota routed host Memphis. Conley added 10 assists. Nets 118, Bulls 109. Spencer Dinwiddie, Dinwiddie, scored 24 points, and Brooklyn hit an NBA season best 25 three-pointers for a victory over visiting Chicago. Lonnie Walker the fourth and Royce O'Neal each made 6 threes. Cavaliers 105, Raptors 102. Darius Garland had 24 points and 8 assists. Max Strus or Struss scored 20 in the third quarter, and Cleveland beat visiting Toronto, which got 18 points from Jacob Poeltl, Poeltl. Nuggets 132, Spurs 120. Nikola Jokic had 39 points and 11 rebounds to lead Denver past visiting San Antonio. Victor Wembanyama had 22 points, excuse me, 11 rebounds, 6 steals, and 4 blocks for the Spurs.